Welcome to the Mediation Workshop conference call. Your line will be in a listen-only mode until the question and answer session. To ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name. I would like to remind parties today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Linda Feinberg. Thank you. You may begin.
Well, good morning or afternoon, as the case may be, and welcome to our third call-in for our discussions with the arbitrators and mediators on our roster. Today's session, as you know, will be primarily devoted to mediation and will be run by Kenneth Andrechik, our Senior Vice President and Director of Mediation and Business Strategies. Now, I'm Linda Feinberg, and I would just like, before Ken starts, to give you a brief year-in-review of 2004 for NASD dispute resolution. First, to our statistics. We had, in the mediation area, a hugely successful year. We increased the percentage of cases that agreed to mediate by 9% as compared to 2003, and we closed even more cases by 9% than we had in the prior year, and our settlement rate was well over 80% again. Now, in addition, we conducted mediation settlement months in October, as we do now annually. This year it was particularly successful. We had parties agree to mediate in over 200 cases. And to give you some perspective, that's about twice as many cases as agreed to mediate in a typical month. On the arbitration side, I think we've staffed at least things fortunately for us. The arbitration case filing was down by about 8% as compared to last year, which, as you know, was our all-time record year. We, in fact, recorded this year 8,200 new arbitration cases. Now, the really significant piece of data for us with respect to arbitration is the number of cases that the staff closed. We increased by 27% over the prior year the number of cases that we closed. In other words, we closed 9,209 cases. Much of that was due to superb staff work, but also much of it was due to the efforts of you on the phone to get the cases moving, to get them resolved, and get them to the award state, and for that we thank you. One of our major initiatives this year was to speed up the overall arbitration process, which we believe benefits arbitrators and the parties. Our case processing time, despite the huge influx of cases over the past 3 years, remained virtually unchanged from 2003, and that is 17.5 months from filing until issuance of an award was the average time for hearing cases. And again, we're very, very pleased with that statistic. In order to move the cases, we implemented a number of measures this year in order to accomplish this goal. First of all, we have asked you, the arbitrators, to discuss with the parties at the IPHC the importance of scheduling evidentiary hearings within 9 months or less after the initial conference. And we have requested that you make it the norm that cases proceed within 9 months, and really the rare exception that any case gets scheduled beyond that time frame. We've also accelerated all of the internal time frames involved in the process over which our NASD staff has control. A consulting group that has come in to help us look at our processes determined last year that we control, that is we the staff, only 20% of the case processing time. The parties and you, the arbitrators, control the other 80% of the time. So we work very hard on that part of the process that we control, and also put into place some initiatives for the part of the process that you and the parties control. As to the internal processes, we shortened our guidelines for serving claims, for sending out arbitrator lists, for completing arbitration paneling, and for serving arbitration awards. We also reduced the number of days for a prospective arbitrator to accept an appointment to a case. and we've also reduced the time allotted for the selection of a chairperson in an arbitration proceeding when the parties cannot agree. And that became effective this September. If the parties are near to reaching agreement, we, of course, extend that time. But our experience is that most of the parties do not agree on the selection of a chairperson, and that's why we implemented that. In addition, we've implemented a new business process in the Northeast region for about one-third of the staff in the cases. We were so successful in reducing processing time for that one-third that we will be rolling this out for all of the Northeast region in 2005, and then next year in 2006 for all of the other four regional offices. In addition, with your help, we have adopted processes throughout the country after a pilot in the Southeast region to expedite arbitration proceedings in matters involving elderly or seriously ill parties. Because we've done this without providing required rules, this really requires the goodwill of the parties to make this happen, but particularly involves you in making sure that where we do have elderly or ill parties, that the cases move quickly. And we put into place, as a permanent rule, the ability of parties to communicate directly with the arbitrators where all the parties agree and where you, the arbitrator, agree. That became effective at the end of September in 2004, so we really don't have data on the effectiveness of that yet. But our pilot program leads us to believe that where all the parties and the arbitrator want to put that into place, it will be effective in helping to move the cases more quickly. One of our major goals for 2004 was to move forward on a project to have a hearing location in every state. And we are almost there. By March of 2005, there will be a hearing location in every state in the United States, as well as places we currently have outside the United States, in Puerto Rico and in London. When we finish with this project in March, we will have 68 hearing locations. And that, of course, is because a number of states have multiple locations. We're very pleased that we can offer this for the convenience of those of you who arbitrate or mediate for us but are not in one of the existing sites that we had, and for the parties and their counsel who no longer will have to go to a location to have their case heard that is not convenient for them. Now, as a result of that, of course, we have had an aggressive recruitment program for new arbitrators for those various locations, and you can find the location of the new sites on our website. Another important 2004 initiative, which we are going to carry over into 2005, has been in the training opportunities for arbitrators. In 2004, we conducted 50 panel member training programs, resulting in over 400 newly trained arbitrators. And we've added a new component to our basic panel member training program, which is a segment entitled Civility in Arbitration. We will, at some point by the end of this year, be bringing part of our initial arbitrator panel training online. That is, the materials for reading and the test will be brought online. We will still maintain the face-to-face interactive program for the initial panel training. And as you all know, we have previously developed a chairperson training, which is now offered only online. Because of the success of the chairperson training online, we developed this year three subject-specific online courses, one on discovery, one on arbitrator disclosure responsibilities, and one on expungement. The third one on expungement, as you know, was mandatory either through online training in paper form or through the phone-in. And, of course, this is our third phone-in. We did one on expungement. We did one on discovery abuse, and today's is on mediation. As a result of all of these efforts, over 6,000 arbitrators have received subject-specific training in 2004, either in the form of online training or of a workshop. And we are going to continue to develop these programs, both the workshops and the online training. And we will be working with the regulatory and disclosure and divisions of NASD to make available to arbitrators in the future programs that are now made available to brokers to help them with their compliance. And you'll hear more about that shortly. These will be in the form of webcasts. There will be no charge for them, and you'll be able to access them through our website. But more about that in the weeks to come. In addition, of course, we continue to publish the Neutral Corner. That gets published 6 times a year. Three of the issues are on paper, and 3 are available only in a web format. Now something dear to all of your hearts, I'm sure, relates to arbitrator compensation. This year, we effected a new rule pursuant to which parties will be charged a fee of $100 per arbitrator to compensate arbitrators in the event that a hearing is adjourned within 3 business days before a scheduled hearing session. And some of you, I assume, have already been beneficiaries of that rule. A couple of years ago, we did our focus groups, which we do every year around the country, with arbitrators to find out what many of your issues were. And one of the main issues we heard about was lack of payment of honoraria for deciding discovery motions on the papers. Of course, if discovery motions are decided in a pre-hearing conference, then you do receive an honorarium for that. But up till now, you have not received them if the papers, the discovery matters, were decided on the papers. We will be filing shortly with the SEC a rule proposal that will, in fact, authorize honoraria for arbitrators for the resolution of discovery motions that are decided on the papers rather than at hearing. And you'll hear more about that from us in the next couple of months. And, of course, as you all know, because you had to fill out a survey form, we modified the definition of public arbitrator to distance even further those people who are public arbitrators from any connection with the industry, whether that is by family ties or prior employment. It's a complicated rule. I won't go into it now, but those of you who are still on our active roster have, of course, been required to fill out a new survey and to essentially reaffirm whether you are an industry or a public arbitrator by your answers to that survey. I'll just mention 2 other things very briefly. We have been working on revising the entire Code of Arbitration Procedure. We just filed what we hope will be our final amendments with the SEC. We anticipate they'll have it out for comment by the end of January or beginning of February. And when it looks like we're near to completion, which I estimate to be about a year by the time it goes out for comment, comments come in, and then we review those comments, we will be doing extensive training for arbitrators, for staff, and for parties on the new code. Lastly, the SEC has approved the eligibility rule in light of Supreme Court decisions in the Howsam case, which made clear that it is for the arbitrators and not the courts to decide eligibility. We now have a rule that is that has been approved by the SEC, which will codify that and which has a number of provisions so that cases won't get split between court and between arbitration. We do not yet have an effective date for that, but it will be sometime early in the spring, and you'll hear more about that from us at the time. I'd like now to introduce Ken Andrzejczyk. As I said, Ken is Senior VP with NASD and in charge of our mediation and business strategies programs. Ken predates me here by a lot. He came to NASD in dispute resolution in 1985 and, in fact, established and supervised our Midwest office in Chicago. He then moved on to New York, and in 1995, as director of mediation, he started really single-handedly our mediation program. We have essentially the only full-time mediation program in the securities area, and Ken has really single-handedly built this program up and made us a premier provider of mediation. Now, as a result of his activities, he's currently chair of the Committee on Alternative Dispute Resolution for the New York City Bar Association, and for the last 4 years has led a very successful task force in organizing a mediation settlement day in New York. TENS also has a primary role in overseeing the development of our dispute resolution website and in working with the law school clinics around the country to help investors who either cannot get lawyers or cannot afford them to find pro bono help from these law schools. And so now I will turn it over to Ken, who will talk with you about mediation.
Great. Thank you very much, Linda, for the nice introduction. We're thrilled with the response to this phone-in series in general, and apparently over 1,900 listeners signed up today, so we're really pleased with the reaction to this workshop. In fact, there was an announcement earlier today that Sirius Satellite Radio is thinking of dropping Howard Stern in favor of a syndicated show on securities dispute resolution. So you've heard it here first. I'm going to go through a little bit of history of our program, some updates. I'm going to try to hit the questions that came in as people registered, and then we're going to take some live questions. And I think it's fitting to do an update on mediation as we begin the 10th year of NASD's mediation program. In some ways, it's hard to believe that it's been 10 years, but in looking back, I was reminded of the strong leadership of some of the individuals on NASD's National Arbitration and Mediation Committee, people who worked hard in designing and developing rules and procedures. In particular, I'd like to thank people like Frank Spaulding, Roger Dietz, Phil Catone, Susan McKenzie, all of whom played key roles in getting us started. NASD experimented with mediation activities as early as 1989 and into the early 90s, but those pilots involved sending cases to other mediation providers. As we got feedback from the participants, the consistent response that we got and reaction that we got was that it would be better if NASD developed its own program. So we listened to that feedback and we started down that course. But it wasn't until 1995, as Linda said, that NASD's program was officially launched with the implementation of our new mediation rules. Those had to be filed and approved by the Securities and Exchange Commission. And that happened in August of 1995. In early 1996, there was a big kind of milestone for the program, and that it received a big boost when the Arbitration Policy Task Force, the group that was chaired by former SEC Chairman David Reuter, but also included Frank Spaulding, who was part of our committee, and Linda Feinberg, as part of their recommendations, said that NASD should continue and expand the mediation program. Now that gave us a real impetus to continue forward. It was a short time thereafter that Linda Feinberg joined the staff as the head of the dispute resolution business and supported the expansion of mediation activities in an extremely important way with resources. Through that support, we got the staff and the financial backing needed to succeed, and anybody who's run a forum knows that you need to have that kind of support and those kind of resources. From that point forward, our program has really experienced steady growth in the uses of mediation. When George Friedman joined the staff from the AAA, he was already a believer, so we didn't have to make any changes mid-course. Linda mentioned in 2004 we had a great year in terms of mediation, but we've also passed a significant milestone by closing our 10,000th case. And for the first time, the total number of mediation cases closed in the calendar year exceeded 2,000. Now, from the beginning, the settlement rate for those 10,000 cases, now as we end the year, it's over 11,000, has been pretty consistent, right in the 80% range. So we're safe in calling that a trend at this point. 10 years, 11,000 cases, we think we can safely say that 80% is what the expectation should be of the party. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the structure. NASD has dedicated staff members in each region who concentrate on mediation. And we're really fortunate to have dynamic, enthusiastic individuals who not only believe in the process, but understand how mediation can help the parties and counsel reach fair and fast resolution in their disputes. It's those staff members taking an assertive role in promoting mediation that are probably the most significant reason that mediation is now part of the dispute resolution landscape in the securities industry. It's not that we just said we build it and let them come. We built it and we actively promote it, and I think that's the reason for the success. In 2004, we also added Julie Crotty to the staff as the Assistant Director of Mediation. And that's a new improvement. Julie brings knowledge and experience from other types of programs and also adds the energy that's going to help us move forward from this strong platform that we've built. Now I want to deliver on the promised topics. I'm going to talk about the mediator qualification process. I know from the numbers of people that have signed up that we have more than just mediators on the line. We have some arbitrators. We're going to talk about the mediator disclosures, and I want to touch on the new standards of conduct for mediators. I'm going to give those mediators a few tips on background statements and then get into a little bit about the intersection of arbitration and mediation, how they interact. Along the way, as I said, I'm going to try to answer some of the questions that have come in before, and we'll give you a specific signal. We'll pause for the MCI operator later on to give you instructions on how to submit additional questions towards the end. And we've got people standing by, and they'll feed me those questions sort of live, but not exactly. I guess the first question becomes why mediation, and it goes back to our decision about how we decided to develop this additional option for parties. I think the primary driver was changes that took place in the arbitration environment. The process was getting more complex. It was getting more expensive for the parties, and we started actually hearing complaints about the evolution of the arbitration process that had outgrown some of the advantages that it used to hold over litigation. It was becoming a whole lot more like litigation. And NASD looked at other areas in the commercial setting that were using mediation and found that this was a process in which we could recapture some of those efficiencies that arbitration had evolved away from, outgrown, et cetera. And at the same time, we thought we could improve in customer satisfaction. By customers, I mean the parties and counsels who are using our services. Customer satisfaction increased by giving the parties more control. The mediation process gives those parties control of the process and the outcome, and those things lead to a greater level of satisfaction. I want to touch on briefly a couple of the key benefits of mediation that we've seen kind of reflected back to us in the form of evaluations and responses, reactions to the program over the last 10 years. And these are sort of my campaign promises when we started 10 years ago. It's fair, it's fast, it's low cost, and it's low risk. Why is it fair? In one sense, the securities environment is dominated by pre-dispute arbitration agreements. Most firms have those clauses in their agreements with customers, and in times of dispute, the customers don't often feel like they would like to choose arbitration at the time of their dispute, but they don't have a choice. They've signed an agreement; those agreements are enforceable. When you add back the element of voluntariness in the process, it adds to the perception of fairness. And when you combine that with the fact that mediation is non-binding and the parties have control of the outcome, the perception of fairness is increased from both sides, really, through the use of mediation. Fast is the second promise, and there's kind of two prongs to the fast promise. One, Linda told you some statistics about turnaround time for hearing cases, 17.5 months. Overall average on the arbitration docket is about 15 months. From the beginning, in mediation, we've measured turnaround time in days, not months or years, but days. Now, on average, parties can expect about 120 days, but literally we've been able to do mediations when the parties needed it within 1 or 2 days of the agreement to mediate. So it's really another area that's in the hands of the parties. The second prong of FAST is the session itself. The vast majority of mediations take place in a single day. I don't know if you've seen the statistics for arbitration recently, but the average now nationally is close to 4 days for the average hearing. Obviously, some of you have been involved with cases that last 10 and 12 and 20 days, so you know that the progress, and people who have been on the roster for a long time know that the days of a single one-day hearing are long gone. We used to start arbitration hearings at the close of the market in the afternoon and have full expectation that they would finish in that day and be done. And that's a fantasy these days. Most of the mediations, as I said, take place and conclude in a single day. Maybe 6 hours is the average. Sometimes there's follow-up that's done by phone, but the gathering is done in a single day, and that's a benefit to the parties. Low cost. When you compare the fees and the cost of the parties in mediation, and that there's two elements, administrative fees that are paid to NASD and the cost of the mediator, we have concluded that about 80% of the time parties would save costs even over the arbitration option, and that is comparing to the forum fees and other costs. When you add in some of the other elements that also, in a sense, favor mediation, attorney's fees, expert witness fees are often less because the process is shorter and it's less formal. All of those things probably add to 85%, maybe 90% of the time, parties would save costs using mediation. So, and again, this has been reflected back to us when we do evaluations from the parties at the conclusion of cases. We ask them what kind of benefits they got. They often tell us that they save costs. Now here's the tricky one. Low risk. I have to be a little quiet about saying low risk because it is something that you are not supposed to say in the securities industry. I'm pretty confident about saying that mediation is low risk because I told you that we've had 10 years now, 10,000 plus cases, and an 80% settlement rate. So we're pretty safe in saying that 4 out of 5 times you're probably going to reach a resolution in this process. In addition, some of the feedback we've gotten from parties, even in the cases that don't settle, say that they've gained some benefit from mediation. They have narrowed the issues that have to be argued about in the arbitration. They've helped, if they do their job right in preparing for the mediation, they've gotten themselves that much closer to being prepared for the arbitration. And the process that follows the mediation is that much more efficient. So it was not a waste of time in the minds of many parties, even if their mediation resulted in an impact. All right, one of the major areas of interest has been the qualification requirements for mediators. We've got a lot of questions in this area. I'm going to go through some of what we do in the qualification process and try to answer some of those questions along the way. First, the things that you don't have to be in order to be a mediator, and one of them is you don't have to be an attorney. One of the questions, and mediators come from a lot of different backgrounds, but it is not a requirement that mediators be attorneys. We know, obviously, we have a lot of arbitrators on our roster who are not, and also a lot of successful mediators who came to that profession by another route. You also don't have to be an arbitrator, and that's another question. It kind of goes both ways. You certainly can be an arbitrator and a mediator on a roster, but the qualification process is separate. So you don't have to be, but it is possible to be both an arbitrator and a mediator. Now, we have that in that qualification process, a system where we gather lots and lots of information, just like we do on the arbitrator qualification application, because we want to provide as much information as possible to the parties about your background, about your employment, about your education, about your business history. And there's 4 key areas that we look at besides all of those basic elements. One is mediator training. What type of training have you been to? Again, this doesn't have to be NASD mediator training, but we want to see what sort you've had. If you haven't taken training, we want to see a program, or if you're looking for an appropriate training program, we want to see one that covers the full spectrum of the ADR processes. We want to see one that covers the ethics of the mediation process. We want to see a program that has a significant amount of role play opportunities, so you're practicing those skills. So those are the elements that we're looking for. We also take a look at whether you've had certifications or membership in other mediator rosters. That can be a factor. It's not a requirement. And we had a question about whether do I have to be certified in my state. The answer there is no. But it's certainly practical to check out the requirements for certification in your state because there may be parallels and you might be able to satisfy our requirements at the same time you satisfy theirs. So it's a good idea to check that out. We look at your experience as a mediator, and that means we want to know how many cases have you mediated, what types Have they been employment cases, securities cases, commercial, labor? What are the areas that in which your experience lies as a mediator? And actually, we want to know the results. How have your cases ended up in settlement regularly? What have been the results of those matters that you've mediated? And here's the tough one. We ask for 4 letters of reference. Now, people who are on the arbitrator roster have a different type of reference letter that they're looking for. On the arbitrator roster, it's almost like a character and fitness type of letter. Someone that's known you for a long time, knows about your business history, etc. And the kind of letters I get for mediation are sort of like this. Agnes is a great neighbor, and she always kind of helps us with all the problems that we have in our neighborhood, and all those things about the lawnmower and everything. And I think Agnes would make a great mediator for your program. And I get those letters, and I read them over a couple of times, because they make me feel warm inside. And I think about moving to Agnes's neighborhood because it sounds like a great place to live. But that's not the kind of letter that I'm looking for. When we're looking for letters of reference, we want to see letters from parties or counsel who have seen Agnes as a mediator. We want to see a letter that says, Agnes was the mediator in our case, and she helped us get past impasse point. I don't even care if it says we settled the case, just that she showed us the skills necessary to help us reach a resolution. The combination of these things, the training, the experience, those reference letters, are our way of trying to make sure that everybody we put on our roster has demonstrated the kind of skills that the parties want, our customers want, in bringing parties together and reaching a resolution. When we put out a list, we want to make sure that everybody on there has demonstrated the type of skills that the parties need. So that's the key and the most difficult part. And yes, if you think about it, you want to hear about mediation experience, you want to hear references from people who have seen you as a mediator, you have to have done some cases already in order to qualify for our roster. Now, those qualifications are reviewed as, again, very parallel to the arbitration side. A subcommittee of the National Arbitration and Mediation Committee reviews the applications that we get on a regular basis, and they are the final approval for all of the applicants to the mediator roster. All right, how many do we have? Some people asked, and the answer is over 1,000. We have, I think, 1,040 nationally right now mediators that are part of our roster. We have a lot in New York City. We have a lot in California, a lot in Florida. And that may be why some of you had questions about, why does it seem like NASD isn't looking for mediators? Because when I call, they say we're not interested. In some of the areas, we really have been saturated, and we do have a lot of mediators compared to the number of cases. We don't want to attract a whole bunch more party applicants when we really can't put you to work. So we're trying to be practical, and if you talk to the staff, we'll have a practical discussion with you about your background, your skills, your location, and whether it's appropriate. We try to give signals about where we do need mediators, and that's something that we keep posted on the list, on the website rather. We have a list of cities in which we're looking for mediators. It's dominated by the new cities. Linda mentioned that we're expanding the places in which we're kind of open for business and dispute resolution. That's arbitration and mediation. So the new places like Hartford and London and San Juan and the spots that we've opened up this year in Alabama, Iowa, South Carolina, and Kansas are definitely areas where we're looking for mediators. And also the 10 new states where we'll expand into in 2005 will be places where we will want to add mediators as well. So keep your eyes on the website for that updated list, and that can give you a good cue as to whether we're seeking mediators in your area. I also had a question about, I told you before that we don't require NASD training as a mediator, but do we put on training programs? Or in the early stages, we definitely did, and we ran programs, the introductory programs, throughout the country. We haven't done that in a while. However, we're going to do one this year, actually in New York City, March 7th, 8th, and 9th. in conjunction with the two court programs, the Southern District Bankruptcy Court and the Eastern District Bankruptcy Court. We've joined with Southern District in the past to sponsor this program, and it's going to be a three-day session, March 7, 8, and 9 in New York City. So we'll have a few slots for that program as well. As we're expanding, we're kind of going back to the beginning in some areas of the country. So it may be that we will find the need for putting on programs like this in some of the newer areas as we go forward. But right now, that's the only one that we've got scheduled in New York. Okay. I also, on the qualification process, I want to mention here the model standards of conduct. And this is particularly a reminder to the mediators who are on our roster right now. These are the standards that are used by NASD, and each application contains an affirmation that NASD mediators are going to conduct themselves in accordance with those model standards. These were originally prepared in 1994 by a coalition of the three organizations, really, the ABA Section on Dispute Resolution, the AAA, American Arbitration Association, and what was then SPIDER, the Society of Professionals in Dispute Resolution. Now that organization is called ACR, Association for Conflict Resolution. But those three groups got together to develop these model standards of conduct, and NASD adopted those for its roster. 10 years later for them, as of 2004, they conducted an extensive review, and there are updates being made to those model standards. The standards cover things like self-determination, impartiality, conflicts of interest, competency, confidentiality, the quality of the process, advertising and solicitation, fees and other charges, and generally mediation practice. I just want you to be aware that this version is being updated, and as soon as it's final, we'll be distributing it to all of our NASD mediators because we intend to keep it as our model. So I want you to be aware of that. All right, let's go to the mediation process itself and the case flow. How do the cases come in? What's the process from that point forward? First of all, I guess it's important to know that cases can come directly into mediation. They don't have to start out as an arbitration, although about 85% of all the mediation cases that we do actually do start as an arbitration, and sometime later in the process the parties find that they need to seek a mediator's help in helping them to resolve the problem. So the straight-in cases, as we call them, can come through a form that's on our website, where a party will indicate interest in mediating, or a paper form that we provide on every indication of interest that somebody is thinking about filing a claim in our forum. Also, the cases, as I said, can be converted at any stage of the arbitration, early on, which is our hope, or at the last minute, which is what in practice we find is a little more common. You hear about settlements at the courthouse steps. Well, at the steps before the arbitration hearing is also a time when a lot of people reassess their case and decide that settlement might be a good idea, and they think they might need to get the help of a mediator. So we find that mediations happen all along that case processing time for the arbitration, as well as coming directly into mediation. The conversions, as we call them, the cases that start as arbitration and move into mediation, come from two different sources, really. Solicitations from the staff. Remember that dedicated staff I told you about. They are looking at the arbitration docket for cases that might be appropriate for mediation, and they are making calls to the parties and counsel on those cases to make sure they're aware of the mediation option, to educate them about the process, and to see if they're interested. And also, they can come; those conversions can come about through the inquiry of one party. And here's one of the most important services that we provide as a staff. Parties can express an interest in mediation through the staff without revealing that interest to the other side. And this is a tactic that, although experienced counsel know that it's prudent to settle cases and it's appropriate to explore settlement, they're still wary of blinking first, of making the first move. And so through the staff, they can express their interest in mediation and explore it with the other side without revealing their interest. And many councils feel like that's a safer way of doing it. That's something that the staff does on a regular basis because they're also soliciting cases on their own. It's not apparent to the other side that this idea came from your opposing counsel. The conversion itself is really an education and sales effort by the staff in getting the parties to the table. That's where sometimes the negotiation begins. The staff is working between the parties to find out what it will take for them to agree to mediate, and sometimes that momentum carries through and it helps in the success of the mediation itself. As soon as the parties have agreed to mediate, we move to mediator selection. And here's the second step of the process for a mediator actually getting assignments. They can get on the roster. Obviously, I told you about the qualification process. And next is, how do I get a case? And the mediator selection process is a little bit different from the arbitrator selection process. And I want to tell you how it happens. First of all, the list is not random. It is not rotational. It is anything but. The staff is working with the parties to find out what they're looking for, what sort of mediators they want, sometimes who they want to see on the list, but particularly the characteristics that they find would be appropriate for their particular case. What do they want? What are the things they tell us? Sometimes they want someone who's an attorney. Could be important for one side or the other to have an attorney as the mediator. Some parties like to see former judges on the list, and that's something that we can respond to. Do they like arbitrators? This was one of the surprises early on. I wasn't expecting as consistent a response, but parties regularly ask for mediators who have also been arbitrators. Thinking about it makes perfect sense to me. The mediator is helping the parties to hopefully reach a resolution, but also an awareness of the process that might follow should the parties not reach a settlement is extremely important. And the parties, and particularly their counsel, have expressed quite a preference for mediators who also understand the arbitration process. So the mediators who have arbitration experience definitely have an advantage that we've seen. What about securities knowledge? Certainly, in many instances, that is favored. You'll find that there are times even when parties will prefer someone who is an industry person because of their knowledge of the subject matter. But again, that's a factor, and we will ask the parties what they're looking for. I had a question from one of the listeners that said, are public or industry mediators preferred by the parties as a general rule? It's a great question because there are no such labels. We don't categorize mediators as public or industry. The mediators are mediators. We provide the complete background for the parties to see, but we don't put a label on them as either public or industry. It's up to the parties because, remember, they're in charge of the selection, so if they're not satisfied with the background of that mediator, it doesn't matter what label we put on them, they're not going to be selected. Sometimes they want mediation experience. They want people who have done a lot of cases in the past. That can be important. Familiarity. I'm talking here about recognition. A lot of the parties are conditioned to want to see something that's familiar on that background profile, whether it's the name or an affiliation. They want to have some comfort level with the mediator they're selecting. And price is sometimes a factor. And that brings us to the issue of payments of mediators. And yes, mediators are paid. Originally, we set the rate for mediators at $150 an hour or as agreed by the parties. And this has really evolved. It's a national program. Geographically, there are differences, and there are differences that are driven by supply and demand. On one end of the spectrum, we've had a lot of mediators that have agreed to do small claims, those cases under $25,000, for a reduced rate of $50 an hour. And on the other end of the spectrum, there are some mediators who command as much as $500 an hour. All the way along the path of that spectrum, we have people fitting. And again, it's really driven by geographic practice and supply and demand. Now, the parties Once the staff has established what the criteria, the staff will build a list for the parties, and they will also provide disclosure statements. All those 142 pages of background information we ask of you is folded into a disclosure statement that has all of your background, your history, and information about your mediation experience. This is an important document. It represents your experience and qualifications, and it also serves to provide many of the disclosures that the parties need. As mediators, don't underestimate the need to make disclosures. This whole process is about building trust and confidence, and the parties should be fully aware of your experience, particularly when you've worked with some of the participants, the parties, or counsel in the past. Also, if you've served as an arbitrator with any of the parties or counsel, disclosures are in order. Just because you're not deciding the case, the parties are not as likely to object to some of these relationships, but the disclosure is just as important. I think the phrase that's used in arbitrator training is when in doubt, disclose. The rule that I always say is think about the headline rule. What would the headline read if the press was writing a story about this case? You have to put yourself in that scenario and make sure that the parties know everything that's pertinent about your background in order to make an informed decision about the choice of a mediator. A tip for mediators, I highly recommend that you regularly take a careful look at your disclosure statement and make any needed updates, such as additional case history or a complete description of your experience. Pay particular attention to the narrative background about your experience. It should be complete. More than a couple of sentences, tell people what your experience is. If you don't have securities experience as either an individual, an arbitrator, or counsel, focus on your experience in other commercial settings or perhaps employment matters, which we also do. But if none of those areas are evident in your background, quite frankly, it's not that likely that you're going to fit the party's needs. They want a combination of subject matter knowledge and process skills, and that's what they're finding. Second tip is be descriptive of your mediation style. Do more than just check the box that you're a facilitative or an evaluative mediator. Early in the process, when we asked parties if they wanted a facilitative or an evaluative mediator, they kind of said, huh? What are you talking about? At this point, they're much more sophisticated, a lot more practiced. They want to know more than just what's your style. So be descriptive about the approach that you take, how you conduct the mediation. And here's a tip also for arbitrators who are mediators. We've learned that it's important for parties in arbitration to know that you're a mediator. Parties are particularly interested to know the extent of the cases that you've mediated, whether you've worked with any of the parties or counsel in the arbitration matter. And please be very aware of the need to make those disclosures. The fact that you've been compensated by one of the parties in the past, even in the role of a neutral, can impact the party's perception of fairness, particularly if they don't hear about it until after the case is over. So that's a tip for the arbitrators who also serve as mediators. I had a question about what support NASD provides to mediators, and there's several key areas that we provide. First of all, in individual cases, we do solicitation and selling of the process. We're out there pitching the process and then matching the party's expressions of interest with the mediator's background. We do a lot of work in generally promoting the mediation process through our literature, through appearances at conferences to educate parties and counsel, through our website and other areas. We coordinate some interactions with the counsel and mediators. Linda mentioned some focus groups earlier. We did some roundtables and focus groups where we brought mediators together with the counsel so that those attorneys could gain some comfort level in perhaps selecting a mediator they might not have used before because they've met someone, they've talked to them, and they have gained some familiarity. And we do some special promotional events like Mediation Settlement Month where we give special prices to encourage parties to try mediation, and that tends to get more exposure for some of the new mediators. On the administrative side, we do the negotiating of the time and place and the price of the mediation and help the parties get together with the mediator on that. We do scheduling logistics for the session, including any rescheduling. And we can provide space. In our regional offices, we have space available where mediators might not. And we can also help arrange space in some of our conference centers where we have group rates that can be of assistance to the parties. Last, on the administration side, our collection services. We get deposits, and we send out invoices, collect the fees that the mediators are owed. So those are some of the key areas of support that we provide to mediators. And last, we're talking about the intersection of arbitration and mediation. And one person observed that we often don't get to the hearing anymore. I'm on a lot of arbitration cases, and they're settling. What can be done about the last-minute settlement? It's true that probably less than 30% of our cases are resolved through arbitrator's decision. I'm not sure that mediation is the cause of that statistic, but we do know that parties tend to wait till the last minute. And Linda told you about the new rule that was implemented in August that will at least compensate arbitrators if the hearings are postponed or canceled within 3 business days of the scheduled hearings. There was another question asking about the tactic of using mediation only as a device to get an arbitration adjournment when the arbitrators refuse to grant one. We have a rule in the mediation side that gives the parties the power to bypass the arbitrator's discretion by agreeing to stay the arbitration to mediate. But remember, mediation has to be consensual. All the parties have to agree. From the arbitration side, balance your frustration with the fact that, with the knowledge that it's the party's case, and if they are seeking to try to settle it, it's a little bit difficult to force them to come to the table to a hearing. If there are multiple postponements, there are some mechanisms that arbitrators have of dismissing a case that isn't being pursued by either side. But keep in mind, it's the party's case, and they've got the right to try to settle it. There's another regular intersection between arbitration and mediation that's in the initial pre-hearing conference script. One of the stated purposes of that pre-hearing conference is to find out whether the parties are interested in mediation. And we want arbitrators to be familiar enough with the mediation process to have confidence in discussing that option with counsel. We've backed off a more aggressive approach that we took a while back, and that was starting with the presumption that the parties would consider mediation and setting a tentative date, because counsel felt a little bit pressured to answer that question in front of the arbitrators. So now the reference is more generic, but we think it's important that the parties and counsel fully understand their options, and arbitrators are in that juncture, in that role, where they may be able to educate the parties about what it means, and we want them to be aware of the mediation process. Our hope is that arbitrators don't view the mediation process as the competition, but rather help the parties find the most suitable means of resolving each dispute. I think it's appropriate now to take some additional questions, and the MCI operator will give some instructions on how to submit those.
Thank you. And at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press *1. And you must record your name. Please make sure your mute button is not on. Again, to ask a question or make a comment, press *1 and record your name. One moment, please.
Okay, getting some questions in already. One is about who to call to see if there's room in the training, and that can be done by email on our website. There's a mailbox for mediation. NASD.com is the website address, and under arbitration and mediation. And we'll put out some announcements about that and a registration form as well. And the same answer to the question about what about other sessions that we might schedule. As we do those, we'll certainly want people to know about them, and we'll put things out on our website. I had one question about mandatory mediation. Someone said, "Gee, if it's so great, why don't you require it? What would be the pitfalls to compelling submission of all disputes to mediation?" We've considered that certainly at the early stages, and there are some programs throughout the country that do use mandatory mediation. We feel like the voluntary nature, as I described earlier, lends itself to the perception of fairness, and that there are enough benefits to the parties that education is enough rather than forced mediation. So that's the approach. We think that through, in a sense, selling it and educating parties about mediation, it's the appropriate way rather than forcing people to do it, because in a sense, in the securities field, some of the parties feel like they're forced into ADR to begin with, and making them take another step would not would probably not be appropriate. I had another question about the style. Does NASD have a preference for a directive style or a transformative mediation? And it's a good question, but I think the important thing is that it's not NASD's preference that makes a difference. It's not one of the qualification factors, but it will be a factor in the party's selection process. So it's the party's preference that makes a difference rather than NASD's preference. And again, depending on the nature of the case and what the parties are looking for, it could be that they seek a mediator with a style anywhere along that spectrum. I guess another question was about the process. What's the usual medium? Is it face-to-face, on the telephone, or both? And sort of a combination. A lot of times there are pre-mediation contacts between the mediator and the parties. And this is a big difference between arbitration and mediation. There are ex parte communications between the neutral and the parties, and often that takes place by phone, so the mediator gets a feel for what the parties are looking for, and a little bit of the history of the case. Mediations mostly take place face-to-face, and then there are some post-mediation follow-ups that can occur. So it's often a combination of face-to-face and by phone, but we do have a surprising number of telephone mediations that have occurred. They started, a lot of them started when we did settlement month, and we encouraged smaller cases to use mediation. Sometimes not practical for the parties to travel in order to have a face-to-face mediation, so the telephone mechanism kind of grew as an appropriate response to that. And at this point, we've got several mediators who, in a sense, sort of specialize in telephone mediations and are very, very proficient at that. So we have a kind of growing number of telephone mediations as well. If you have no or few mediation cases but many arbitration cases, how do you get involved? It's a good question, and a lot of people have talked about, how do I get started? I think that the best way, and the advice that I give to anybody is start with a training program. It's got to be a multi-day, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days. It needs to be an extensive program. It's going to tell you at the conclusion whether this is something that you want to pursue. I have never had someone say that a training program like that is a waste of time, but sometimes the parties that attend decide they're not going to be a mediator, but they understand the process more. A valuable starting point is a training program, and then the second stage is to try to get some experience. The way to get experience is often to volunteer through court programs, community-based programs. Your case experience doesn't have to be in securities matters, but we do want you to get some cases under your belt. There are some opportunities for mentoring that's been, quite honestly, a little bit difficult for us to arrange, but it's also a good way to start in and get some experience and some guidance from an experienced mediator. A question about whether an accreditation by a state automatically categorizes you as a mediator. Well, sort of in that state, but it's not automatic from our perspective. It's one of the factors that we would take into consideration, but it's not automatic. Let's see. A mediator has problems with mediations being canceled at the last minute. They've set aside time. They're expecting to get recovery. Are there any plans for cancellation fees? So far, that hasn't been a problem that has been so widespread that we've had to implement rule changes to address it. But there are some mediators who, in their agreement with the parties, write in provisions of that nature that there'll be some consideration for cancellations. Often they've had experience with the counsel or the parties in the past, and they know that it may be a problem, or their schedule is such that they need to have that protection, and it would be something that we'd want to work out with the parties beforehand on an individual basis. someone who's a family mediator in Florida, what kind of training would I need? I kind of go back to that point. If you're going to be selected by the parties, I'm not talking about qualification for our roster. Your mediation training or mediator experience might be enough to qualify for the roster. But before I would even entertain an application from somebody in Florida, they'd have to have a really strong securities background or employment background. It's not enough to be a good mediator in another area, and it's just a practical aspect. If it's all divorce or family mediation, the parties in our commercial setting are going to shy away from that, and they're going to go towards people that have commercial experience. I'm not an arbitrator. Can I become a mediator? Absolutely. It's not a requirement that you are an arbitrator. It's a different path, of course, and it doesn't require that you also be an arbitrator for us or in general. So, okay, here's a question. Wouldn't it be a good idea for arbitrators to educate parties of the benefits of mediation during the pre-hearing conference? I think I wrote this question. Of course it would be a good idea. And it's one of the things that I hope the arbitrators get more comfortable with. Again, knowing what it's all about is helpful, as opposed to simply reading the script and saying, are you interested in mediation? Are there freelance mediators? I see. Why would I do this? Okay, so, why would I want to go through your roster as a mediator instead of doing it on my own? Well, I think the answer to that lies in the support that we provide to mediators, the fact that we're pitching cases and soliciting cases on your behalf, the fact that we handle the administration and handle a lot of the administrative tasks that you would have to hire staff to do. We do collection for you and also provide information to the parties about your background and keep that up to date. So we think there's a lot of kind of support areas that would help a mediator to connect with the parties as opposed to doing that on their own. We've got the docket of cases here in front of us and can more easily match up the mediators with the parties on a particular case. I had another question about whether NASD should hire full-time arbitrators or mediators. So ADR is clearly the trend, so why not have the staff members do this? It's not quite the case that it's just mom and apple pie and mediation is right for everyone. And particularly in this setting, we think it's more appropriate to have an independent roster of neutrals rather than have employees serve as the arbitrators or even as mediators. Even though the case that mediators don't decide the outcome, we think it's more appropriate to have that independent roster of mediators. The process to apply, there's a place on our website, again, where you can ask for an application to be sent to you. So that's the right medium. I'll tell you that we'll screen them for location to make sure that it's not a place where we're inundated right now with mediators, but that's the place to stop and make a request for an application. Are there plans for mentoring? It's certainly something that it's a question that arises regularly. It's a possibility that we might be able to set up a mechanism whereby an individual can sit with some experienced mediators. But I'll tell you that it's a time-intensive and labor-intensive mechanism to set up. So I don't think that's on the short-term horizon. It's something that we consider on a regular basis, and it's a possibility for the future.
This is Linda Feinberg again. I want to thank Ken for this very, very informative session on mediation. Also to thank all of you who have listened and have asked questions. We have a range of very specific questions to individuals about their own training in certain states, will it qualify them in other states. If you have those kinds of specific questions, if you'll send us those by email, we will endeavor to answer them, but I don't think we will answer them at this point on the phone-in. And I want to take this opportunity to thank Barbara Brady and Lisa Angelson, who are with our neutral management program. Barbara is the director of that program, and they are responsible for all of the logistics and the arrangements for this call-in as well as the previous ones that we have done. Ken reminds me that you are all invited to listen to a replay of this workshop or to tell others about it who may not have listened in by calling MCI at the following number, 1-800-216-3087. Again, 1-800-216-3087, and that will be available starting tomorrow, January 12th, through and until February, through February 10th. After February 10th, there'll be an audio recording of the workshop on our website. Again, that's www.nasd.com. And once again, thank you all for participating. We will be doing several other workshops in the course of this year, and we'll make sure that we give you advance notice, as well as notice of our additional online training programs. Goodbye, and have a good day.
Thank you. That concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.